Hi, welcome to the Martin Seminars Network. I'm Bob Martin, and for today's program, we'll be discussing overcoming workplace negativity. Now, if you're like most people, it's hard to put a definition to negativity. Hard to define, but we all know it when we experience it. For example, most workplaces have policies in place for those workers who don't produce. You know, we cajole, we coach, we document, discipline, and terminate. But we rarely have strategies to deal with those workers who cause others to not produce. They aren't the disease, they're carriers. And yet, they have a greater effect over our overall performance more than any one person within that organization. Now, what does this mean for our company? You may notice the changes others take as they slip into negativity. Their attitudes change toward their superiors, their coworkers, or maybe even your customers. Their productivity begins to slip, and they no longer take pride in the quality of their work. This also affects the team as their performance declines. You may notice the entire team now shows less enthusiasm. There's more conflict and manipulation. If allowed to spread untreated, you're now experiencing an epidemic spreading through your entire organization. Now there's a lack of cooperation or maybe even vicious competition, and now everyone's experiencing an us versus them mentality. What may be worst of all is that sometimes we may become infected. We lose that sense of team we love so much. We dread going into work and our days seem to drag on. Our environment seems too large to overcome and we feel helpless. We lose our own pride in our work. Our drive disappears or our productivity falls. We make one offhand cynical remark and now we're branded as the source of trouble. That's why it's important to protect our own moods and resourcefulness as we learn to deal with the negativity in others as well as within us. In this discussion, among other things, we'll take a look at the top three factors that cause people to go negative, and a four-part formula we can use to break free when we fall into a negative spiral. We'll also look at a strategy for dealing with typical whiners, complainers, and other types of chronic negativity. Let's begin by looking at the continuum from optimism to pessimism. We know, for example, that optimists seek solutions, whereas pessimists seek problems. We don't want to err towards either extreme. For example, unbridled optimism may not be as helpful or as hurtful as extreme pessimism. We don't want to err towards either extreme. For example, unbridled optimism may be as inappropriate as extreme pessimism. Rather, we'd rather focus on being pragmatic. Pragmatism is that middle ground that falls along the continuum from pessimist to skeptic to pragmatic to realistic optimist to unbridled optimist. Now, we recognize, for example, that different jobs or roles require different outlooks. We commonly expect, for example, the people that are in our roles in marketing or sales to lean more towards the optimistic side of the continuum, whereas those that are in accounting or finance, we expect them to be more pragmatic or perhaps even skeptical. If the personnel within our finance and accounting departments were unbridled optimists, that could easily lead to a financial catastrophe for our organization. For our purposes, we look at negativity as the result of unchecked pessimism, which is costly and counterproductive. We could also define this as a difference between hopeless versus hopeful. Whereas the person's going through a negative viewpoint, where pessimism is deeply ingrained, may feel that the situation is hopeless, whereas the optimist finds it easier to access resources they need to overcome events. I once did a seminar for the United States Air Force on optimism within the workplace and productivity. And one of the things that was shared with me was that the people that are participating in the seminar told me that it's no mistake that most of our soldiers in the military tend to be fairly young. At that point in life, they believe that they're invincible, and they're more apt to go into combat with a more resourceful frame of mind. Whereas, as people begin to mature, they begin to think more in terms of consequences, and they develop a more pragmatic or skeptical approach, which may cause them to be less effective as a soldier. Now, for many of us, the workplace doesn't refer to a battlefield, or doesn't resemble a battlefield, but definitely, having an optimistic viewpoint where the person can access resources allows us to overcome the obstacles that we face on a daily basis. And that's where the person who displays negative behavior, or perhaps our own negativity, comes into play. It impedes our ability to access those resources to come up with the most resourceful solution. Now, what goes into forming negative attitudes? We find that there are three primary factors. One is beliefs, second is perceptions, and third is interpretation. For those people familiar with rational emotive behavioral therapy, they know that our experiences really aren't based on events. More often, they're based on our belief about what those events mean, where ABC stands for an activating event, B is our belief about what that event means, and C are the consequences, how we feel and how we act, which is not based on the actual event, but off of our belief. And those beliefs are often formed at an early age. For example, if we're staying in line at 10 items or less checkout line at a grocery store and somebody gets in line in front of us with 12 items, we may feel upset or frustrated. And that feeling is based off the belief that they shouldn't be doing this, which we often learned at an earlier age when we saw somebody else become upset or frustrated in a similar situation. Now, how can we use this, for example, with dealing with negative attitude? We ask if our belief is currently true. It may have been true at one time, but is it true now? And will that belief add or detract from our experience? Is it empowering? If necessary, we collect evidence to the contrary. Beliefs tend to fall into two major categories. One is global and the other is personal. Global beliefs are along the lines of people are, work is, the world is, you know, the world is fair, or life is not fair. Personal beliefs along the lines of I am, I can, I can't. In overcoming some of the negative beliefs that we may have, we challenge those beliefs to see if they're currently true or if they rationally make sense. For example, if I have the belief that I'm not good with numbers because at one time I did very poorly in math, but now I'm in an accounts payable department, I find that I'm perfectly adequate for dealing with the numbers within my occupation. I go about collecting evidence to the contrary and say, well, at one time I wasn't so good with numbers, or perhaps I'm not the best person in numbers, but I'm perfectly adequate for what I need to do here. Or perhaps I'm having a hard time dealing with some of my coworkers or the people who report to me. And I may form a belief saying, I'm a lousy leader. I look for evidence to the contrary of that. I say, well, in this position or in this role, perhaps I'm not the best leader. There are other roles where I am a better leader. For example, in my home life or in my personal life with friends, I may find I have no problem leading when necessary with a group of friends. So now I can start to access my resources and say, how can I develop the skills I need to lead in this situation? When we look at the second element that forms negative attitude, we look at perceptions and how we perceive the situation, or again, what we believe it means when something happens. And our point of view is largely learned and usually fairly early in life. In order to challenge some of those beliefs that may have no basis in logic or reason or may not be empowering, we can ask clarifying questions, first of ourselves and then of others. For example, what's another way of looking at this? How else can I explain what just happened? Is there another way to view the situation? For example, I may have a belief that if that person cared about me, they wouldn't talk to me this way. I can rationally challenge that belief and say, is that necessarily true? I look for evidence to the contrary. Could it be true that they care about me and they care about themselves, so they said this? Or they care about me, they have no idea how I'm affected by what they say, and they chose to say that? Or they care about me and they wouldn't be offended by what they said, so they went ahead and said it anyway. It could be any one of those things, so I look for evidence to the contrary. That allows me, again, to remain resourceful and to refrain from labeling that other person. To say if that person is a bad person, or they're spiteful, or they're aggressive in nature. When I label somebody else, I'll often respond to the label instead of the person in the future. That manner of dehumanizing somebody else makes it harder for me to get past that label when I need to deal with them, and harms me in the end. We can also deal with those ABCs when we ask clarifying questions of other people, and we can do that in a very non-threatening way. A format might be, when I did blank, you did blank, and I felt you were blank. Notice how those deals with the ABCs. For example, I did blank and you did blank are both the activating events, things happened. and I felt you were blank is our belief about what that even means. And then we ask, is that what happened? And who knows, maybe we'll say, they'll say, yes, yeah, I did that to tick you off. But at least we're able to get out in the open. We'll let them jump off that bridge on their own instead of just assuming it for them. So what goes into forming negative attitudes, we talked first about beliefs, second about perceptions, and our third element is interpretation, how we give understanding to a situation. And in this, we find the top three factors that cause people to go negative. And they're what I call the three P's: personal, permanent, and pervasive. Personal, permanent, and pervasive. Somebody that's going into that negative downward spiral looks at an event, for example, a loss, a problem, or a difficulty, and they explain it in terms of personal. This has to be somebody's fault. It's either my fault or it's your fault. More often, it's going to be your fault than mine, but it has to be somebody's fault. Whereas an optimist will say, you know, sometimes things have no fault. And they look at permanent. This is something that's going to go on forever. Whereas an optimist says, you know, this is just one moment in time. This too shall pass. And pervasive. Somebody's falling into that negative spiral will often say, my whole life is messed up because of this one thing. Whereas an optimist says, you know, this is just one element in my life. They tend to compartmentalize. The problem is that people that go into that negative cycle, the pessimists, they don't learn from this blaming type of interpretation. Whereas optimists, they learn their lesson and move on. I had an experience with this where I'd been studying this topic before I went out to lead a seminar in the Denver area. And at that time, I had about three seminars lined up over 3 days. And I had been sick the week before, but I felt I was pretty much over it, so I went ahead and went out to do the seminars. In the very first seminar, I lost my voice about one-third of the way through the day, in case of delayed laryngitis, let's say. And at the end of the day, after everybody left, I was packing up all my gear, getting on to go to my next 2 days. Boy, I could feel myself just slip into that downward spiral. I started to have what Zig Ziglar calls a pity party. And you know the problem with a pity party is that hardly anybody comes, and those who do don't bring presents. At least that's what Zig says. And so I started falling into that spiral. I could feel myself becoming more and more pessimistic. I could feel my mood just drop. And I asked myself, and I caught it and rethought it. I said, wait a minute, does this necessarily mean what I think it means? Personal. Whose fault is it that I lost my voice? And the reality is, it really isn't anybody's fault. Sometimes you just get sick and you still have to soldier on anyway. So it wasn't my fault. It wasn't somebody else's fault. It just happened. Permanent. Is this going to go on forever? Well, no. Realistically, I know, for example, when I catch a cold, I'm usually sick for no longer than 3 days to 5 days, let's say. And I already pretty much got over the cold, so this is just a little case of laryngitis, and that would pass at some point. You know, and who knows? It might make a great story, like right now. And pervasive. Is my whole life messed up because of this? Well, not necessarily. For example, these people I'll never even see again. And the people I see tomorrow, I'll see them for 1 day and I'll never see them again either. I still have other parts of my life that are just fine. I have friends I haven't even used yet. I have parents who love me. I have a sister. Well, I have parents who love me. But there are other areas of my life that are just fine. After working through those three elements for myself, which probably took me about a grand total of a minute to 2 minutes, I could feel my mood break, where I didn't have to go down and bottom out in this little negativity spiral. I was able to catch it and change direction immediately. So the next thought that I had was, okay, what can I do about this? What can I do? And I started to brainstorm. I said, well, you know, I'll get to my next town. I'll take good care of myself. I'll have a nice balanced dinner. You know, I'll take some vitamins if they help, perhaps some orange juice. I'll get to bed early. I'll get the rest I need. I won't talk very much tonight. And tomorrow I'll be very economical about how I use my voice. No long-winded stories like this one. The result? I gave one of my best seminars ever that next day. I became very economical in what I said. And so everything I said had a specific reason. And it allowed the participants even more chance to interact and to deal with me and to work with each other. And they came away from that session just enthralled with it. So the end result is that problem or difficulty that I experienced actually produced a better end result than if I hadn't experienced it in the first place. And the cause of that beneficial result was that I stopped and took a look at those top three factors: personal, permanent, and pervasive. I caught it and rethought it, was able to come up with a better solution. Let's take a little break. When we come back, we'll look at three other factors that contribute to negative thinking. I'm Bob Martin, and you're listening to the Martin Seminars Network. Are you looking for ways to boost your career and get the quality information and training it takes to stand out in today's fast-paced world? At Martin Seminars, we take the goals of motivated people from around the world and provide the professional development tools to make those dreams a reality. Martin Seminars offers programs that are tailored to fit your specific needs. We are committed to your success as a learner and a professional. Martin Seminars programs are structured to take your new skills beyond the training room and into practice. Whether you're interested in time management, communication skills, teamwork, or leadership, or want to create a future for yourself in supervision or management, Martin Seminars has a program designed to launch you into fulfilling your potential. Our programs place an emphasis on business knowledge and are technology enriched to give you an edge in today's marketplace. Martin Seminars is committed to deliver training that is better, faster, and a higher return on your investment with success. Martin Seminars facilitators are carefully selected for their abilities to inspire as well as teach. They come from diverse backgrounds and combine business knowledge with current technical skills to provide examples your people need in today's marketplace. Martin Seminars places a strong emphasis on preparation and follow-up, preparing you for success in your field. From on-site, web, and computer-based workshops to self-instruction tools, books, tapes, and CDs, we are committed to guiding you through the maze of personal and professional development possibilities. If you are already a professional with time commitments that don't allow you to attend traditional training, you can get the information you need in many of Martin Seminars' programs entirely online or at your own pace. Now is the time to fulfill your dreams for the future and get your career on the rewarding track with information from Martin Seminars. Let us give you the tools you need to compete and excel in the ever-changing marketplace. In today's workplace, information is vital to your success. Take a bold step into your future and contact us at www.martinseminars.net. That's www.martinseminars.net today. Welcome back. I'm Bob Martin, and you're listening to the Martin Seminars Network. And today we're discussing overcoming workplace negativity. We left off by talking about the top three factors that cause people to go negative. And now we'll look at three other factors that contribute to negative thinking. And that's the lack of control, community, and confidence. Three factors. Pessimists may sometimes lack the ability to differentiate between what they can control versus what they can't. Or they may have an overblown sense of being able to control more things in their environment than they realistically can. Somebody who's more pragmatic in nature may look at situations within their environment, recognize that they control very little, but they can influence much more than they can control. It's that difference between expectation and reality that often causes people to become frustrated or to become pessimistic in nature. Specifically, when it comes to dealing with other people, I can't control what other people think, feel, or do to a great extent. I may be able to influence what they think, feel, or do, some to a greater extent than others, but I can't absolutely control that. And because I don't expect to control that, I tend to feel less frustrated on a regular basis. That allows the pragmatist to remain more resourceful, where they can stop and consider their options. Okay, what can I do here versus what I can't do? With a sense of community or that need to belong is another factor that may contribute to negative thinking. The pessimist may feel that they have very little community about them. They don't belong. They feel ostracized from the group. They don't feel included. To build that sense of community, we can focus on our interpersonal skills and we can actively build relationships rather than just waiting for them to happen. We can ask someone else to become our mentor rather than just waiting for them to select us. We can be inclusive of others. Even if we feel as if we're not included by others, we can be inclusive of them. And we can take for ourselves opportunities to work in groups, for example, for a task force or planning groups. If we sense that somebody else is feeling excluded from the group, we can ask them to join our task force or our brainstorming group or our planning group. The first two factors we talked about were lack of control and community. The third one is lack of confidence. We can reaffirm our value on a regular basis by writing out our personal qualities or accomplishments or taking time to reflect on those. One of the things I've always loved to do is to keep a little file inside my desk drawer of accomplishments. As I go through and accomplish activities on a weekly or a monthly basis, what I call a kudos file, I go ahead and drop a little note inside that file. For certain companies I worked at, this was helpful when it came time for my annual review, because I didn't have to rely on my supervisor to mention all my accomplishments over the year. I could bring in my own file and say, okay, I accomplished this, this, and this. I can also put myself in situations where chances are I'll be successful, to plan small situations where I know I'll be successful. So I experience that on a regular basis. If I'm working on a larger project, I may take time to stop and celebrate each subpart of that larger project that I accomplish. And third, I'll eliminate perfectionist thinking, where finished is better than perfect, and what I do is good enough for the situation. Not everything needs to be done perfectly. If I'm working with somebody else that may appear to lack confidence, rather than trying to give that confidence to them, I may ask questions that ask them to affirm their value. For example, to ask them about their personal qualities or their accomplishments. What have you done really well in the past month? Or I'll ask them if they can put themselves in situations where they'll be successful, where they can celebrate their successes on a regular basis. And rather than telling them how to feel or think, you know, to not become a perfectionist, I may ask them, is that a helpful view for you to have? Does it serve you in some way? Is it possible the way in which that was done is good enough? Now, realistically, I expect to get some arguments from them. I don't expect them to buy into this completely. What I'm trying to do is just introduce that little element of doubt that may cause their belief to slowly change over time. If I try to dispute their belief for them, then they'll argue with the dispute I brought up. So instead, I ask questions that may cause them to begin to doubt their belief that they formed over time. Now, with all this discussion, I don't mean to suggest that somebody should be optimistic all the time. There are times when we fall into negativity, and that's just fine. It may even be appropriate. It's what we call situational negativity, and it's based on a valid concern. The danger is that situational negativity can progress into chronic or habitual negativity, where it becomes our automatic response to situations, where we encounter a loss, a problem, or a difficulty. For the person who's more pragmatic in nature or optimistic, they're able to confront the situation, they can cope with it, and continue on. Some of the most common habitual negativity types that we encounter is, for example, the person who worries the worst, the worrywart. They can make a mountain out of a molehill. Or second, the chronic complainer. And third is the self-saboteur who says, I can't do this, I can't do that. We call these habitual types because they show up again and again. This has become the person's learned response to a loss, a problem, or a difficulty, to either worry instead of taking action, to complain again rather than taking action, or to sabotage themselves by believing they can't take action. It becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy. Now, why do we identify these types? Well, so that we don't take it personally when they go through these types of experiences. It's just their nature. And to make certain that their behavior doesn't rub off on us. Remember, they're not diseased, but they are carriers. The one critical action that we must avoid at all costs is to negate their experience and to not fix the problem for them. For example, the person who worries the worst thing we could do is tell them, just don't worry, because it negates their experience. Rather, we can brainstorm with them. What's the worst possible thing that could happen? What's the best possible thing that could happen? Where are all the things in between that could happen? What are the probabilities that the worst possible thing will happen? And is that survivable? This is a process we can also use with ourselves. When we recognize that the probability that the worst possible thing is going to happen is very small, and even if it does happen, we can live with the outcome. It releases a lot of the stress that we feel and frees us up to become more resourceful, saying, okay, now, What can I do to make sure that that doesn't happen? For a chronic complainer, we may choose to allow that person to have an opportunity to vent. Usually when they start to whine and complain, they receive nonverbal cues from people that show non-acceptance. You know, people roll their eyes or heavy sighs, they start to whine and complain, or they try to leave the environment immediately. So instead, for a change, perhaps we may serve as a resource to allow that person to vent. And so as they start to complain, we listen very actively. We listen for the moment when they start to repeat their complaints. That means they're recycling. They're going to start all over again. Now we could step in and put some personal responsibility or accountability onto them. Okay, so the problem is this, 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 and this. Now, what can you do to make that a little bit better? Now, they're probably going to go back to whining and complaining. Again, we may step in and say, okay, I understand the problem is this, this, and this. Now, what can you do to improve the situation in some way, to have a better outcome for yourself? We stay very resourceful with them. If they choose to not brainstorm with us, to not work on solutions, we can make a choice as well. We can choose whether we want to stay with that environment, allow them to use our time, or whether we want to remove ourselves from that environment and say, you know, I want to listen to you. I want to talk with you and work through this when you're willing to work through this for yourself. For that third negativity type that says, I can't do this, that feels a lack of confidence, we can allow them to have small experiences where they can succeed on a small basis and try to link as many of those together as we can. Or as we mentioned before, asking them to write out their personal qualities or their accomplishments, or at least speak those to us, and to eliminate perfectionist thinking. You know, finish is better than perfect, and the way in which you do things isn't that good enough. The reality is that when a person has a negative outlook on life, people will respond to that person in a negative way, which reinforces their perception, their beliefs about their environment. It becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy. One model that I've heard used for overcoming negativity is what they call the I Can model. Heather Whitestone, who was Miss America of 1995, was the first deaf Miss America. And she was asked if her lack of hearing caused a great handicap for her. She said, "The most handicapped person in the world is the negative thinker. My mother raised me to believe I can," which serves as a helpful acronym for this I Can model. I stands for identify, C stands for construct, A stands for assess, and N stands for name. Number one, identify the situation. Identify objectively instead of subjectively. What is actually going on here? And is that necessarily true? For C, construct an optimistic response to the situation. Aim for a feeling of hopelessness as opposed to helplessness. If we get stuck in that cycle of saying, I can't do anything about this. Well, what if I could? What would I do if I could to become more resourceful? A, assess options and act on them. List the pros and cons for each of our options. And as we go through that process, often we'll find that one option is most attractive to us. Chronic negativity can be linked to depression, and action is one way of overcoming the negative feelings associated with that depression. And name resources that would be helpful to you in dealing with that situation. Are there other people that can help me to brainstorm or to work through this? Are there books or tapes or old research that I can access? If I have to prepare a budget and I don't feel capable of doing so, was a budget like this prepared in the past I can look up in some way? One resource that many of us don't use, effectively anyway, is our own supervisor or manager. We're often afraid to take our problems to that person to look for insight because we're afraid they may judge us, because they are in a judging role when it comes to our annual review. There's a great possibility that person has encountered a similar situation to what we're going through right now, and they may even feel more valued if we ask them for their input. Now, an important aspect here is to recognize that we don't ask them to solve the problem for us. They've probably been asked to do that before. So instead, we're willing to solve it for ourselves, but we're looking for some insight, somebody to point us in the right direction. Now, as we mentioned at the very beginning of the program, one aspect of negativity that makes it most dangerous is this ability to travel from person to person, where it becomes contagious. And with that, we look at a contagious mood, conflicting views, and communication behaviors that tend to cause negativity to travel from one person to the next. When we talk about contagious mood, refrain from being carrier ourselves to stop the transmission, at least at our point, and to not buy into the negative moods of others. When we hear somebody expressing a negative thought, we may ask to ourselves, or even out loud, is that necessarily true? Is it possible it could be something else? Challenge that belief. And to preserve our own optimism by use of that I can model that we talked about earlier. When we talk about another catalyst for causing negativity to travel, conflicting views. We can head off a lot of frustration at the pass if we just stop and accept that others may have different views from ours. And it doesn't negate our views. It doesn't negate their views. They're just different. And perhaps neither one is better than the other, just different. Stay focused at the subject at hand. Avoid from letting the situation become personal. Deal objectively with the situation. And manage our own behavior. Ask ourselves while we're interacting with another person, at the end of this interaction, whose behavior do I want remembered after the exchange is over? How would I want to see myself in the future? I tell many of my groups, seize the ethical high ground and invite the other person to join us when we're talking about those conflicting views. And third, communication behaviors. There's a study done long ago about the verbal, vocal, visual elements of communication, greatly misquoted, greatly misinterpreted. But the most important aspect to say, how we say something perhaps may be more important than what we say. Know which behaviors trigger ourselves and trigger others and choose to respond differently. For example, when somebody waves their finger at me or points their finger right at me, I often feel somewhat defensive, or at least I have in the past. Now, when that action happens, I'm immediately reminded that, wait, this is something you react to. You don't have to react this time. You can choose to act differently. So I caught it and rethought it. So know what triggers set you off so that once you're aware of those triggers, you don't have to be set off by them in the future. As well as noticing what you do that sets other people off. Watch. Covey often talks about communicating with the eyes. When I communicate with somebody else, I watch them. I look for cues that may show the person's become defensive. You know, their body posture changes suddenly or their facial expression changes. I stop and deal with that change immediately rather than allowing it to go on. I'm sorry, did I just say something that may have offended you in some way or that may have affected you? Let me know so we can deal with that rather than just ignoring it. These are some of the elements that enter into negativity within the workplace. We've talked about the top three factors that cause people to go negative and a four-part formula we can use to break free, that I can model. We also talked about strategies for dealing with whiners and complainers and the one critical action to avoid at all costs, which is solving the problem for the other person. By investing time and effort to deal with our own and others' negativity, we gain in that we influence the type of environment we love to live in. You know, Peter McWilliams wrote a book called You Can't Afford the Luxury of a Negative Thought. And I like the way that he described this. He said, you have inside of you two attorneys. One presents evidence that life is bad and hopeless, and the other presents evidence that life is good and full of hope. You are the judge, and you can include or exclude whatever evidence you want. Is life good or bad? Which point of view do you think will lead you to a happier and healthier life? My belief is that, make no mistake, it is a life and death decision. Either life is wonderful and I have lots of opportunities to look forward to, or life is awful and I'm just hanging around till I die. Those are the extremes, but which way would you rather lean? I'd like to thank you for joining us today. Of course, within this half-hour program, there's no way that we could do justice to all of overcoming negativity in the workplace. That's why we do offer, for example, books, tapes, and seminars on that line. I do have a free resource that I can tell you about, though. I'll put a link on our page that you encounter for this program, a link directly to Finding Joy Within Our Lives Again, the Flip Side of Negativity. I wish you all the best. This is Bob Martin, and you're listening to the Martin Seminars Network.